This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions, live local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Denise and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everyone, to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on the Newsmakers program on 1430 KYKN. Kind of a somber day for me.
Me too.
9/11 is always hard for me. I tend to get emotional. I always feel like I've got tears just right under the surface on this day.
Anything could, you know, trigger that.
You never know when your life in the blink of an eye is going to change. And I think we were talking before we came on air that we all have connections and family members and personal connections and things that connect us to that day.
Absolutely.
And it all kind of, I don't know about you, Dave, but it does, a lot of the raw emotion that I felt that day and my family felt, it does come back. It's dimmed a little with time, but it's still there.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And when you think about how drastically from September 10th, I remember, you know, the day before, to then September 11th, to then September 12th, 9/12, and how vastly different we were as a country on 9/10, 9/11, and then 9/12, and what we look like today. And it makes me sad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was really weird for me because working in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I was living in Hawaii at the time, and you know how busy the Honolulu International Airport is, right?
Mm-hmm.
To see all the planes coming in being escorted by jets, every single one of them had escorts. And then 6 hours later, nothing.
Yeah.
And then no planes in the air at all.
I was here
for days.
And seeing nothing, no contrails, no nothing, no air traffic. It was surreal. It was unprecedented. I know I will never forget it. My son, I think, was 9 at the time. He will never forget it. So, you know, I just wanted, before we get started, and our topic today is actually especially timely. We're talking about emergency preparedness. Because like I said, you never know, in the blink of an eye, your entire world changes.
Absolutely.
And so to be prepared is important. And so our guest today is the emergency preparedness manager for the city of Salem, Greg Walsh. Greg, welcome to the program on this 9/11.
Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
It's good to have you. And like I said, I think, you know, emergency preparedness, being prepared for the unknown, to have a plan is really, really critical. And that's something that we do on a personal level. I think I always encourage people to be prepared. We can talk more about kind of our personal preps and what we do. But Greg, I wanted to have you on today to talk about, you know, residents of the city of Salem. And I'm sure Kaiser has a similar staff person in a department. But what is your role with the city of Salem? And talk a little bit about how a municipality prepares for emergencies.
Of course. Thank you so much. So I am the emergency preparedness manager. I sit under the fire chief, but I do it for the entire city. So I could report to any director, anybody that needs the assistance of emergency management. A lot of my job is planning for and preparing for emergencies. So how do we respond to a flood? How do we respond to wildfires? And not just small emergencies. You know, everybody has a small emergency, such as a house fire or a car accident or a tree branch falling through your sunroof.
You need to talk it now.
I will.
You brought that up.
Including the big things. Yeah. What happens if Cascadia? What happens in hazmat events? So that's what my job is planning for those, working with all of the partners in and around our community, in the neighborhood, in the areas, to prepare them. And to make sure that we have those relationships built so that way when it is time that we need each other, we know the right people to call. It's not the first time I've met them.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have this conversation. We have a predetermined plan. We have courses of action already established. We've had this discussion. How are we going to do it?
Yeah.
And what are the hard facts that come with that? And there's quite a few.
Yeah, there are a lot of hard facts. There are a lot of unknowns. I mean, even just talking about Cascadia, the Cascadia subduction earthquake. I mean, I don't know how that's, I mean, they're predicting a 9.0. I mean, I don't know how you can't prepare for every contingency on that. But so, you know, infrastructure, do you deal with that with the city as far as if bridges come collapsing down? I mean, all the things that are going to happen, can you plan for as much of that as possible?
So, yes.
Okay, and good. That's a good answer. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Short and sweet.
We do the best we can with the best information that we have. So we, for example, you talked about infrastructure.
Yeah.
So we know that there are about 67 roads and bridges throughout the city of Salem that are owned by ODOT or the city.
Okay.
And not many of them we would consider to be seismically stable according to a 9.0 earthquake. Mm-hmm. Now, we've learned a lot about this potential for the 9.0 over the last 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of these bridges were built prior to that.
Yes.
So looking at all the streams and rivers and overpasses and everything else, we're not heavily reliant on planning for them. What we plan for is priority routes and how do we get those roads open to evacuate people, to get resources in. Even if there's a bridge down, we have, for example, we know that if there's a few certain areas that we have concrete cylinders that we would use for sewer and piping that we could drop into a ditch so the water continues to run through and then we could make a bridge over it.
Nice.
So we've come up with some rather creative ways of getting around obstacles so that way we can provide those services, emergency services, shelter, preparedness, food, water, mm-hmm. et cetera, in a less than ideal situation.
Yeah. And I think obviously Cascadia is the worst case scenario. One of the Certainly. Worst case scenarios in our region that we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
We're not in Tornado Alley. We don't deal with hurricanes. We deal with earthquakes. And we've had a couple of them off the coast, different fault line, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you have to pay attention to that, because if you don't read beyond the headlines, you can get a little freaked out because there's been some that have been mm-hmm. happening. So from that perspective, the city's got preps. The city's prepared for that. I understand that the staging area for that when it happens would actually be Redmond.
So according to a lot of the state and federal plans, that the initial response would occur, forces would fly into the Redmond airport for mm-hmm. logistics, supply, and support, and then they would look at flying over into the valley to provide that additional support and then onward into further areas further west. So we actually had a FEMA assessment. A FEMA team came down to McNary Field here mm-hmm. in Salem mm-hmm. and did an assessment on the airfield. And then we also had a different group from Department of Homeland Security come in to see how they would continue to secure that. And what a lot of that looks like is bringing resources in and then staging them. So the four major functions are for medical evacuations, mm-hmm. for logistic staging on how do we get supplies here and then out, command structure support. So as they bring FEMA leadership in and command structures in, how do they set up a shop there?
Yeah.
And then search and rescue.
Yeah.
So how would we conduct search and rescue out into these harder to reach areas and get them their supplies?
The last couple of days, we had a lot of rain, flooding here in Salem.
Yesterday
and,
was
and Kaiser.
Downright yeah. biblical.
And yeah. yesterday even took us off the air for a couple of minutes.
Oh, wow.
So in that scenario, did you get called yesterday for some?
So yesterday I did receive several notifications. We have a really robust flood alert warning system here in Salem, and you can sign up for it at the Salem Alerts and on the Salem website.
Uh-huh.
But we have stage alarms. So as Pringle Creek started to rise, as Clark Creek started to rise, I started getting notifications seeing where they were on mm-hmm. on the level. Not to a level that I was specifically concerned about. We had some minor flooding in some small areas,
yeah.
just street level flooding.
Some garages got flooded. Yeah.
But it wasn't something that was as intense as we've seen in the past.
Sure. So okay.
Even though that was intense yesterday.
So you didn't have to work that hard yesterday.
But it's good to know, actually, that you do have those alerts, and so you're mm-hmm. getting pinged. I was actually, again, Facebook, thanks, social media,
right.
seeing people putting videos out mm-hmm. of. I mean, that amount of rain, when it has no place to go, it tends to go into basements. It tends to go into, it's going to go where it's going to go. So there was a lot of that.
Certainly.
One of the things you're talking about, this, what the city has done to prepare, what the region is doing, FEMA, emergency management. Now, the next level, before we get into sort of personal preparedness, there's another sort of citizen level mm-hmm. in between that where people can volunteer, and that's CERT. So you know what CERT is, Community Emergency Response Training. So that's sort of the local citizen. It's a little sort of quasi like a bridge in between. So mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit about CERT?
After the break.
Oh, we have to take a break. See, this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart,
like
and I can geek out on this stuff. So yes, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk more about CERT and then what you can do as an individual. But before that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. And we're talking about emergency preparedness, and I just wanted to drop in that Sportsman's Warehouse is having a blood drive with the Red Cross right now until 4 o'clock.
Oh, and that's all part of it, too. Yeah. That's important if you can get down there.
Warren Franklin was just there, and he just came back to the studio.
Good reminder. Give blood.
It saves 3 lives.
Wow. Fantastic.
For every quart you give.
Excellent. Again, that's a part of emergency preparedness.
Pint. I think it's pint.
Pint? Yeah. Pints, quarts.
A quart would be a
lot of blood. I'm a little woozy. I need
two cookies. Greg, how much do you give? A pint?
I'll go with a pint.
Okay. All right.
You're going to need more than one cookie and a cup of juice to recover from that.
Yeah.
We were talking about emergency preparedness with Salem Emergency Preparedness Manager Greg Walsh. And before we took our break, we were talking about CERT. So that is Community Emergency Response Training. So let's talk a little bit about that. That's kind of that mid-level between your citizens and your municipality. What's CERT and why should people be interested in it and why should they do it?
So the CERT program, it's in Salem, we do it as 21 hours of free training. Mm-hmm. You just have to dedicate the time. That's really the hard part. But it teaches you a little bit about first aid, mm-hmm. how to be prepared as an individual, how to do a little bit of search and recovery. How do you find the people around you so you can help them? Mm-hmm. Our big catchphrase is neighbors helping neighbors.
Yeah.
So if you are prepared by yourself, how can you expand that to your neighborhood? How can you become a more resilient neighborhood, resilient community, survive and overcome disasters and hardships together?
It's empowering. I am a CERT member, so I have been through that 21 hours of training. And yeah, it is a commitment to do that. It's also interesting and it's also very sobering when you realize the level of responsibility and how much I didn't know before going into it. And then what I learned on the outside coming out, it's like, this is important. We need more people in the neighborhood. I want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. I want to be someone who can get out there and to help. And, you know, part of the going door to door and you're triaging people. You go through exercises where I think I played a victim that had a broken leg. And, you know, there's acting involved, Dave.
Oh.
There's makeup and, you know, it's a big production.
Makeup and everything.
Yes,
wow.
Very much so, to make it as real as possible. And like I said, it's sobering.
Certainly.
But to be part of that, to know that I can go out and help my neighbors. In my case, in my neighborhood, we have a cache that has supplies. You've got certain CERT leadership that has access to that. There's radios in there. There's emergency food supplies. There's all kinds of stuff in there. So as a resident of that neighborhood, it's comforting for me to know that that's there. So if in the event of, you know, a disaster where CERT is mobilized, what does that look like for the neighborhoods when they see CERT, they see you, they see FEMA? What are they going to see? What kind of action?
So the CERT teams are really great community leaders that we can employ at the lowest level, that mm-hmm. understanding that the city of Salem, greater Salem area, has about 270,000 people.
Yeah.
And about 110 first responders on duty at any given time.
110 to 270,000. That's
on duty at any given time. So we have more in reserve that would be called mm-hmm, in automatically.
Sure.
But when we add on an additional 2,000 CERT volunteers that have been trained since the early 2000s, mm-hmm. that is a significant increase. So having people that have some training, a little bit of authority, some experience doing a little command and control for disasters, specifically trained for disasters, can be hugely beneficial to each neighborhood, each community. We're running a class right now that we actually had a wait list for. We had
good.
50 people and a wait list.
Yeah.
We just figured out the next class is going to start here in October, and it's going to be about 3 weeks on, I think we have it as Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that will be here in Salem. So more information will be on the City of Salem website if people are looking for that. And we work really well with Kaiser, Marion County, mm-hmm. Polk County. We realize that emergency management and emergency response cannot be done alone. We can't do it by ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the people that are by you in a disaster that are the ones that help you the most. Having seen that, having gone to Puerto Rico for 45 days, having been there in the response, I've seen it, that it's the people near you that are the ones that help you recover and help you be resilient and survive and be better from a disaster.
Yeah, because any disaster, I mean, it's going to cut off the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And so
your streets, your water, your electricity, your sewer, everything's going to be, could be cut off. So
what do we say? We're 3 meals away from anarchy or whatever.
I mean,
when you just think of the panic level, people that are frightened, don't know what to do, not prepared in any way. A lot of people I know, and I talk to many, many people, it's like, oh, the government will protect me, or someone else will protect me, or, you know, it'll all be okay. It's not going to happen. I get very frustrated with that mindset, because that person then becomes a burden or a problem because they're not prepared, and then normalcy bias kicks in and they don't want to deal with it. So from the CERT perspective, you having people on the ground right there in close proximity, that must help you as far as emergency preparedness and law enforcement.
Yes. So we do have that. It's that presence, right?
Yeah.
Having a presence of somebody wearing a vest and a hard
yes,
hat
yes.
and showing some level of leadership. They are representatives of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So having, much like all of our employees, they're representatives of the city. So having people that understand that FEMA is not going to show up in the first 2 days.
Yeah.
We have the 2 weeks ready program, which is pushed throughout the entire Pacific Northwest. I recently finished a training at the FEMA Region 10 headquarters mm-hmm. where Mike O'Hare, the FEMA region administrator,
mm-hmm.
encouraged us to continue to push the 2 weeks ready program
yeah.
because it's going to take at least 2 weeks for FEMA to show up and start providing regular resources. And that is simply food, water, medication
yeah, it's
in a
be
cascaded
basic.
Type event.
Right. So, okay, that's a good segue into that because, you know, you've got CERT in the neighborhoods. That's certainly going to help things. I know, you, like you said, the vest and the hard hat, somebody that looks like they know what they're doing, that actually does know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
can exude a sense of calm and order to put order to chaos as quickly as possible. Water and food.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ready. To me, that means basically have 2 weeks to survive on your own, assuming that you're going to be on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about what should somebody who is hearing this and saying, well, I'm not 2 weeks ready. What do I do?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for bringing this up. This is one of the things that I'm so happy I get to talk about on a regular basis. So when we talk 2 weeks ready, like you said, food, water,
yeah.
medications,
yeah.
shelter. Did you include your pets, kids? Who relies on you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're probably a provider in some way, whether mm-hmm. it's just to your parents, to your neighbors, to members of the community. Even us as employees, where we provide services to the community. So the 2 weeks ready concept is essentially, are you okay to be on your own for 2 weeks without having to go to the store? Could you camp in your backyard for 2 weeks?
Yeah. People ought to try that. Do a dry run.
That's a tough thing to do, actually.
Mm-hmm. Without going back in your house, can you be okay for 2 weeks? And yes, that includes the bathroom.
Well, I actually want to talk about that. I know
sure.
people don't like to talk about that, but those are things if you're really on your own for 2 weeks, something comes up like that, you have to deal with your waste.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't want to. These are things, we're going to go there, Dave.
Okay.
But
I just dig a trench, so.
Well, there are other ways to do with that. When you're not going to have, you get used to the modern conveniences. We live very comfortable lives,
mm-hmm.
very comfortable lives. Something like this, when you're thrown off your game, you're thrown out of your normal routine, you're going to have to deal with that. What's the recommendation in 2 weeks ready for dealing with that?
So much like everything else, having a supply or a way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we talk about, and it's a big program that came out of the Regional Disaster Preparedness Office, mm-hmm. which is a program from the Portland area. How would we provide sanitation programs for all of these people?
Right.
The big system that came out of that was the two weeks ready and twin bucket system.
Uh-huh.
So twin bucket, it's
yep.
exactly what it sounds
okay.
like. Two buckets, mm-hmm. one for liquids, one for solids.
Yep.
And there's quite a bit of information online.
We don't
about
have to go
that.
Into too
yep,
much detail on that, but it sounds like there are resources
there.
For people out there.
Certainly, but don't forget about toilet paper, hand sanitizer. Because if you're already in a situation where you have a gallon of water per person per day, and that's for washing your hands, drinking, cooking, and then you get sick because you haven't been sanitary,
yeah.
then you're in a much worse situation because now you're on limited water with, you know, how much toilet paper did you stick in those buckets beforehand?
Exactly. And those are, you know, again, those are things you have to plan out. People think automatically food, but then it's like, what kind of food do you have? I have bags of beans and rice. Well, you know, think about that. You're going to be in a very stressful situation. Your kids are going to be scared. Have some foods that you actually like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe depending on what it is you buy freeze-dried food. I won't mention the name brand, but there are so many options mm-hmm. now. And they're actually really good. And I would also encourage people, have a meal with one of those before you're dealing with 2 weeks in your backyard.
Yeah. There's a number of organizations that do allergy-friendly meals
mm-hmm.
as well. So
mm-hmm.
whether it's camping meals, which are a great opportunity because camping meals are actually made to be consumed, where some emergency food is made to sit on the shelf and look
25-year shelf life for some of them, sure.
So understanding, but having it, actually sitting down and eating it, figuring out what it requires to cook it. Do you
right.
have a way of cooking it?
Yeah.
Do you have a gas grill, a little camp stove? Do you have quite literally a lighter and a fire? And how are you going to cook that?
Yeah, how are you going to make fire? Those are there's I think of the little toilet paper tablets that you can get. Mm-hmm. There's this little stove that you can get that you just use mm-hmm. twigs and things in your backyard, and you can actually generate enough power from that stove to charge small electronics. Mm-hmm. So I know I totally geek out on this gear because there really is a lot.
There's so much out there.
So many resources. We were talking too, you know, what happens when something like this hits. What if you're at work? What if you're in your car? What if you're on the freeway? You know, what do we do? This, to me, it doesn't freak me out to think about these things. It's actually empowering to think about them, to sort of war game them. What advice would you give to people that may be freaking out a little bit to encourage them to actually kind of war game this out?
Of course. So being prepared is like having a savings account, right?
Yeah.
Things go wrong, you have a little money on the side so you can repair things.
Yeah.
That's what being prepared is. It's that peace of mind. So having the sometimes hard conversations of what would we do if we were at work? Thinking about, could I walk home in the footwear I'm wearing right now?
Yeah.
Do I know how to navigate home? Do I have a map? Can I do it without my phone as a GPS?
Oh, that's a big one.
Yep. So having a little kit in your car can go a long way. So having an extra pair of shoes, just that old pair of running shoes that you're going to throw out, stick it in the back of your car with an extra pair of socks, maybe a raincoat.
A sweater.
Just sweatshirt. Clothing appropriate for the season, right?
Yeah.
We live in Oregon, so having...
Right. Give it 5 minutes, it'll be winter.
Extra jacket, gloves, a hat. Water.
You touched on one of my favorite things, gloves.
Yeah.
Is for everything, and when it comes to emergencies, is having a pair of good work gloves. Because we know from Puerto Rico, one of the most treated injuries was people injuring their hands because they were trying to dig through their homes to get their stuff, and they were just cutting their hands open. So if you're already limited medical care, limited water, limited first aid, and you cut your hands open, you're going to be in a really bad place.
Yeah, because
so spending a couple bucks to get a good pair of gloves is...
That's crucial.
And that's kind of stuff you learn on the ground, actually, when you're involved. And I think actually you might learn that if you go through a CERT training as well.
Yep.
It's going to hit on a lot. There are still a lot of resources out there as well. I think...
Yeah, let's
want to take a quick break because then we'll dive into a little bit more, because I want to talk about, you know, if someone is interested in actually joining up, what CERT looks like, and talk a little bit more in detail, especially on this 9/11 when we're really looking at... being prepared for emergencies. It can happen anytime. The severity can vary, but always good to be prepared. So we are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires, and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions, in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And we are talking all things emergency preparedness today with City of Salem Emergency Preparedness Manager Greg Walsh. Greg, before we went on the air, or before we went to our break, we were talking about gloves and the importance of having gloves because of broken glass. And you were telling us earlier about a personal story that illustrates the importance of gloves. Would you share that with our listeners?
Sure. And this goes to having a kit in your car overall.
Yeah, yeah.
So yesterday was my wife's birthday. We went up to Portland trying to go to the art museum, and a tree branch, as we parked, fell through our sunroof and shattered the glass. So because it's raining, it's Oregon, I fortunately was able to quickly get out, open up the back of my car, grab my tarp, put it over, get my gloves out, start cleaning that up.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to use my gloves to clean the glass and not damage my hands. So just having that on hand, and then other things I had in my car.
A tarp.
And, you know, that's hugely beneficial, and duct tape. So we were actually able to seal up the broken sunroof with the glass that came through and actually seal it up so we could drive home and not have that problem. But that was because I had that kit in my car.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to go, you know, rely on everybody else, try to find a way of doing it. It was just right there, started making it happen. So just having a little kit in your car can go a long way.
And your wife is never going to forget this birthday.
Yes.
You're lucky. I mean, because the way you were describing it too, had it been a warm, sunny day, had your sunroof been open, I mean, what if you can extrapolate that out and make yourself a little ill if you think about those things. So
certainly.
Thank goodness. Yeah,
you
thank
don't
goodness.
Want to be doing what ifs.
Yeah, no.
That's
no.
But having the what if thoughts, especially with these big disasters and the way we prepare, is so very important. You know, what if you are not with your loved ones? Who, you know, are they going to be okay without you? Are they prepared wherever they are? Do you have kids at school? Do they know how to get home? Can they walk home? Do they have a picture of you? This is something that we see time and time again.
Yes.
Asking an 8-year-old to describe you to another adult.
Oh, boy.
Oh, quite an interesting set of examples you get there. So having an actual picture of you or your family and your pets in your kid's backpack when they go to school. Because, hey, my dad is tall.
Right.
Dad might be 5'5". And
he's tall to someone who's 3'4".
Tall to a 7-year-old, not necessarily tall to everybody else. So thinking through that, and how do you get home? How do you...
Well, and you talk about how do you get home? We have adults who don't know how to read maps anymore because everybody relies on GPS.
Mm-hmm. And so, your phone's only going to last so long.
Right. And so we were talking, in the last segment too about the little stoves that'll heat things up. And I think when they talk about an emergency is you don't want to, basically the phone lines go down. I think you can text still. If you can try, the bandwidth on that is a little bit less. So you could maybe text to your kids. But you talk about that. We talk about kids and pets now. We're adults. We have our preparedness. But you have, especially small children, do you have enough diapers
and
for
wipes.
2 weeks? And wipes. I mean, you talk about sanitation and things that are going to potentially go wrong. Then you're going to have cranky kids with dirty diapers who are hungry or who are eating beans and rice. And do you have games for them to play? Everyone relies on electricity for video games. Do you have things to keep, keep the kids occupied while you're kind of going through this, air quotes, adventure? and then, Greg, you have a dog. So how do you prepare for a dog?
Certainly. So, I don't keep a leash clipped on my dog all the time. So we actually have a leash in our shed, and then we have one actually outside, quite literally just sitting underneath our steps. So that way, if we had to run out real fast, we could grab him and clip him on.
Yeah.
And that's really important because in a lot of disasters, especially earthquakes, pets freak out too.
Yeah.
And your dog may be great and not, maybe the friendliest dog all the time, but in a disaster when they're scared and then you're scared and it amplifies.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And somebody comes running up and asking for help and your dog bites them.
Oh my.
So it's happened plenty of times. So we actually bought a muzzle for our dog that we could put on him and he can eat and drink through it. He hates it.
Yeah, mine does too.
I can't imagine any dog would like a muzzle.
But it's a peace of mind.
Yeah.
Right? It shows that everybody else that he's not going to bite them. I can bring him and be safe about that. So we also have extra dog food for him. We have extra, literally keep a container of wipes so we can sanitize wherever he goes to the bathroom if mm-hmm. we're in a shelter,
mm-hmm.
Extra bags, some of the other stuff that we plan for. So if we have to be okay with him. Now we also keep records of his vaccinations printed out in a Ziploc bag. So just thinking about that. And if you're going to a shelter, if you're going to bring your pets, do you have a kennel? Do you have leashes? Mm-hmm. Do you have collars? Do you have proof of vaccinations? Because there are some shelters that if they're run by private industry, there's a lot of public and volunteer organizations mm-hmm. that set up shelters and you can generally bring your pets. But if it's a privately run shelter, they have the right to say no if you can't prove that your dog's vaccinated or your pets are taken care of.
And then there's a choice that you're going to have to make in a moment again of chaos and fear and everything else. And that's one more choice. You don't really need to add that on to your stress level at that point if you can avoid that. And
the chip
forward.
Would help.
Mm-hmm.
My dog, he is microchipped. So all the records that he got when he was treated are on.
But that would be assuming they would have a chip reader at the...
I'll buy one. I'll bring it up.
Yeah. Keep that's a chip.
But again, having photos of your pets is that same thing. Is how do you prove that that's your pet? So having that consideration and also thinking about... I lost my train of thought.
Well, I want to segue back to kids because I was thinking school-age kids. One of the things, fire safety, we talked about when my son was little, we had a place we're going to meet out by the streetlight. So everyone is out. So we know we're not having anybody go back in thinking that he's still in the house. You talk about kids that are at school and, you may be half a mile from home. What do you do? You got mom and dad are at their places of work. Junior and Susie and Sally are over here. I mean, what is the recommendation at that point from, say, the emergency preparedness department from the city of Salem for a family in that? Is it best to stay put? What's the recommendation for that?
It kind of widely varies.
Yeah.
So by age, right? So if you have high school age students, they're probably going to be okay walking home.
Yeah.
And okay, bye, I'm leaving school and going home because I know we're prepared there.
Mm-hmm.
But having younger children, they might need somebody to come find them, come pick them up. They might need the teacher to continue to be the caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are essentially responsible for the children, but how prepared are the schools and how prepared are the students to be at school if they're stuck in a situation like this? Now, there's a lot of retrofit going on that the bond measure was passed for the retrofit of schools, which is great to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a serious concern schools are localized. They're per the area, but that can still be a long walk for somebody with tiny legs.
And
how do you plan that if they are supposed to walk home and there's no way you're getting home?
Yeah,
what are they going home to?
Else.
Exactly. And you don't know. You talk about retrofitting. I know I live in a 100-year-old house. I don't have high hopes for that house surviving Cascadia. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't at that point. And I, you talk about bracing to the foundation and things like that. But you did talk about schools. I know in my workplace, we have safety committees. We train for sort of these things. We have presentations done. Does the city work with the school district as far as for emergency planning and preparedness with the schools? Is there a partnership?
Certainly. So the Salem-Keizer School District actually has an emergency manager. Mm-hmm. And they have their security, safety, and life professional program. Mm-hmm. So they're fairly active in planning and coming up with these ideas and solutions. I work fairly close with a lot of our CERT members are actually teachers.
Yeah.
So they come to the training, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've been working more to try to get preparedness into the schools and how can we actually turn it into almost like a club? How could we see it in other countries that are resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Israel is a great example where the seniors teach the seniors in high school teach the elementary school kids basic levels of preparedness. So it becomes a culture of preparedness. It's a great, because it gives back to the community.
Yes.
It counts as service time. And it's a way of creating that prepared mind, which is something we talk about, or resilient mind. Just always be situationally aware. Understand what's around you. Understand the hazards you may face. And how do you just stay smart about it? You know, there's plenty to talk about that.
There is. Well, you mentioned situational awareness. I don't know how much time we have before the break, but I want to mention just really quickly, because I know probably all of us noticed people walking on the street, heads buried in phones. Not a lot of situational awareness. And that's just in everyday life. That's for crime. That's for, you know, assault, anything. Railroad tracks. We don't have horns on the railroad tracks downtown anymore. You've got to actually look up from your phone and so
or walk into the crossing beam.
Well, and unfortunately there've been a spate of some accidents. People, you know, and then I have a hybrid car that when it's in EV mode, it's silent. So there's all kinds of things, situational awareness. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and that there's levels of situational awareness?
Absolutely. And there's just the general, are you observant? Do you know what's going on around you? And that goes back to that basic thing. Unfortunately, in the United States, we've had a rash of mass shootings recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen it at in California, in Texas, and all over the country.
Right.
And some things you can't be super prepared for, but having that awareness, knowing where the exits are, knowing how you're going to get out of a building, knowing how you're going to get out of a large event. I mean, we had the state fair here recently and thousands of people came. When I walked in, did I know where all the exits were? Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's having that situational awareness and prepared mind. Do I know the exits of a building? Do I look for the signs when I walk in? Do I count? This is a nerd moment, but when I go to hotels, I count how many doors away I am from the stairs, because where are the exit signs? At the top, right?
At the top, yeah.
So once smoke starts billowing out, it blocks those signs. So how many doors are you when you stay in a hotel actually from that exit? So when you're crawling on your hands and knees underneath the smoke,
you're counting off.
You can actually figure out where
going. I do that when I fly. I count my seat backs, whether it's behind me. And I actually am one of those nerds who pays attention when they do the safety briefings on the planes. Again, people don't. And, you know, there's so many things we get kind of blasé. And again, like I said, we live very, very comfortable lives. And so to be able to think about that, to run through those scenarios, I think is very critically important. I want to talk a little bit more, people that want to take it up to the next level. We probably are going to hit on this on the final break as we get into detail. But like I said, I've been involved with CERT for quite a long time now. It is very empowering. It helps that partnership. I want to talk a little bit more about what people can do if they're hearing this, if they want to get involved at that next level, what it's going to take to get involved with CERT. And then as we close too, maybe just some more, I want to talk a little bit more about 9/11 and what happened with that day, and just a general mindset of preparedness in general that I think would behoove the citizens of Salem to take that up. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on the Newsmakers program on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by the Sylvan Learning Center.
And we are back talking all things emergency preparedness. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to listen. This is for me, it's a somber day. emergency preparedness, I think, is the perfect topic for today.
Absolutely.
To empower and help people to prepare for the unexpected, things that will probably radically alter your life. Before we went on the break, we were talking about if someone is listening to this and, you know, they are personally prepared, they want to take it up to the next level, they want to be part of the solution in their neighborhood and help work with the sort of the powers that be. Greg, what's the best first step for them to take?
Certainly. So the first step is, if you're a self-learner, there's a lot of resources online. There's the Red Cross has a great prepare guide, and that's just a great start. The City of Salem is actually running a 2 weeks ready campaign. So on the City of Salem website, you can follow three of our city employees, follow the 24-week disaster preparedness calendar to get their entire families ready over the next 24 weeks.
I love that.
For 2 weeks ready.
That's so great that you guys are doing that.
Certainly. And the next step is going out and taking training. Mm-hmm. And there's the CERT training. Mm-hmm. There is, if you are a former medical employee, if you have medical training, mm-hmm. we have the Medical Reserve Corps here in Marion and Polk counties. And that's a great opportunity to continue to use your medical experience or sign up for, even if your some of your licensure has lapsed, Servor and the Medical Reserve Corps have the ability to say, in a disaster, we hope that you would come use your previously qualified medical skills in a disaster type scenario. So there's a lot of training out there, taking some basic first aid training. We know, we actually spoke about this before we started the show today, about having somebody, the people that are around you are the ones that may be the ones that save your lives.
Yeah.
In any emergency.
Very true. Yep.
The national response time for first responders is 4.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. A human body can bleed out in about 90 seconds.
Yep.
So having somebody next to you that can put pressure on a wound, apply a tourniquet, some very simple life-saving first aid measures is quite simple to learn, and there's a lot of ways of doing that. CPR is amazing. I can't speak highly enough about people who just take even a basic level of CPR, the hands-only CPR, just to keep that going until first responders get
there. Because that sometimes changes with the breaths and it, but now it's just mm-hmm. But it is important. I've taken those classes as well and working on Resusa Annie.
Yeah.
And that, again, as far as it's not frightening, it's empowering to get past that mindset to, you need to start thinking about this because it is empowering and it gives you a sense of confidence that I may not be prepared for every single contingency I can think of, but gosh darn it, I'm going to be prepared for a lot more than I was yesterday.
Absolutely.
Basic first aid.
Basic first aid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You did real quick want to touch on the Mayor's Resiliency Task Force, just because that is something that is coming up. So I wanted to let you hit on that just a bit. Briefly.
Thank you so much. So back in January, the mayor announced a resilience task force. In July, we went to the council and we proposed to develop the resilience task force, with our scope being reaching out to 50,000 people over the next 2 years to give them at least 1 hour of emergency preparedness training.
Wow.
So we're working with our partners through the Red Cross, through different organizations. We're looking for organizations that would be willing to commit their whole organization getting this training. Just an hour, just to set that mindset, make people think about being prepared. And we've already had a lot of great people, partnerships already saying that they're excited, they're going to get into it. And we just, the more the merrier. If we reach 50,000, why stop there?
Yeah.
So it's very
would that be
exciting.
Something that, like, local employers as well, if they want to partner
Absolutely.
Up and say, I've got my entire staff, I want them involved in mm-hmm. this, I'm going to give them an hour off to go do this?
I can tell you that there's several organizations that I'm already lined up to go talk at. So Salem Electric is one that I'm set to go talk to all of their employees. The Oregon State Police Barracks here in Salem, I'm scheduled to go talk to all of their employees. We have a number of other organizations, private industry, public industry, here in and around Salem that have already signed up. And so it's already going great. We're already on this headway and we haven't even technically started counting the numbers yet.
Wow.
So the more the merrier, the more people, it becomes part of the solution, not part of the problem. Is how can we help each other?
And people can get more information on that where?
Through the city's website. We do have, and our Facebook, we keep a lot of information updated there. So you'll see a lot more come up about the Resilience Task Force over the next month, but the 2 weeks ready program and just getting general preparedness, you'll find that all over the city's website right now, and our social medias as we're posting videos of our employees that are getting ready, and it's really great. They're all excited for it. And
nice.
That's very cool. We'll have this for show notes as well to link
sure.
up a lot of this.
Yeah.
Before we're just about running out of time here, but I did really quick. We talk about, you know, personal connections. 9/11 has affected all of us in different ways. It was a life changing event, and when you kind of look back over your shoulder, it maybe not have felt like it in the moment or the days and weeks after. But looking back, reflecting on that, you know, how did your life change? Because, you know, you have connections to that.
Certainly. So I remember sitting in Spanish class in high school.
Yeah.
That's how old I am. Yeah. So I was in high school, sitting in Spanish class, watching it and just not comprehending.
Yeah.
And then throughout my life, I ended up at Massachusetts Maritime Academy where they were doing this degree in emergency management. And I was like, hey, this is something that it's still in my mind. I mean, this was early 2004, 2005. I started looking at this and as I continued, I ended up enlisting into the National Guards and commissioning when I completed my degree in emergency management. So thinking about it, watching it in Spanish class and 10 years later, I was actually in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So 2011, 9/11 of 2011, the 10-year anniversary, I was in Afghanistan getting ready. And I just had that moment of like, this is almost direct cause and effect.
Yeah,
this has led me to be happy to serve and be happy to be here. And now we're 18 years later, and I'm thinking about the people that were born on this day, 9/11, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Today is like the first day that they can actually walk into a recruiter station and enlist on their own without parent supervision.
Wow.
They're officially 18. That's the impact on this.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, and we were talking about they've got first responders, FDNY. Their kids are now starting to enlist and seeing those stories and that legacy continuing, that legacy of service, your legacy of service and how 9/11 directly impacted the choices that you've made in your life to serve.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very powerful.
Yes, and there's a lot of them, like you just mentioned, that are 18 now. They didn't experience
it.
They didn't see it. And all they can see is images like on Facebook that keep getting censored all the time.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. But they give you the choice, though, to uncover it and look. And you should reflect back on it and learn about it and be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do. And we thank you for that.
Yeah. Definitely thank you for that. You're right, Dave. It is important to remember, too. Mm-hmm. And I tend to, every year on this anniversary, immerse myself in some of the images and the recordings. And I just ordered a new book about it. I think it was The Last Plane in the Air, talking about actually people who survived Cantor Fitzgerald, who were up there, who people who made it down, and the stories. And it's just from an historical perspective. This is what happened. Not my opinion of what happened. This is what happened. Because we have, you said, Greg, these kids are just turning 18.
Mm-hmm.
They have no recollection of what our life was like before September 11th. And our world was vastly different, very different on September 10th than it was on the 11th and then the 12th. And we have changed radically in some ways for the better. In many ways, I think, for the worse. I think it's hit us hard and the effects have been long lasting and they keep rippling out over time. And like I said, today tends to make me sad. I go back. You can't help but be drawn back to the emotion. I remember standing on my street holding a flag and a candle. I mean, and just being on the street and people driving by, and it was a rainy night. And oh, I'm going to get emotional here.
Yeah.
And just the emotions and how traumatizing that was to us as a nation.
Yeah,
and I still feel it. And I think it's important for us to impart that to our kids and the generation coming up, what that was like, what we were before that, because we were a different country before that.
History. You need to learn the history.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. All of it.
All of the history. There's all good. There's all bad. There's a very ugly history. But we need to learn the history so we don't repeat it.
And stories like yours, Greg, talking about how that directly affected you and really changed the trajectory of your life. Those are stories that give me joy, that give me hope. Seeing the stories of the kids of the FDNY that are making those choices to go into service, to go into firefighting, to go into police work, that gives me joy. That should give us joy.
Absolutely. Greg, thank you very much
for
all the information.
Great information.
Thank you for having me.
cityofsalem.org?
.net.
.net. Okay.
And yeah, we have links. There's links. Tons of stuff.
We'll do all those links and... thank you for your time today and all the hard work you do and keep us safe for sure here in Salem and in Kaiser and Marion, Polk County, and Wednesdays with Denise. Thank you again.
Thanks.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.